For a moment, Fletch sat on the pool edge, his feet in the cold water. Then he dropped forward into the water. He thought of drowning. Shortly, he climbed out of the pool. He pulled on his cut-off ski pants, his socks, laced his sneakers, and went to join Carr on the terrace. Chapter 21. Fletch sat with Carr at the little table on the terrace on the sand bluff overlooking Lake Turkana. "A lake in the middle of a desert," Fletch said. Carr said, "The lake is down about a mile from its edges since I've known it." In the airplane coming in, Fletch had watched the Cario River wandering over sand toward Lake Turkana. The river dried up miles before it reached the lake. A sad, empty landscape surrounded the lake, miles and miles in every direction. The only marks upon the landscape, besides the few widely separated shambas, were water catchments, which were empty. "The Lake of Many Names." Carr gazed over it. "Aman, Galana, Basso Narok, Jade Sea, Lake Rudolph, Lake Turkana. There are Nile River perch in it. Explain that to me. They used to grow to as much as 200 pounds. Nowadays they run 30, 40 pounds. Naked men on logs were fishing the lake. A waiter brought two glasses, two bottles of premium beer, two bottles of lemon carbonated drink. "Thank you, Fred," Carr said. He poured some of the beer and some of the lemon drink in each glass to make the shandies. "Over there is Kubifora." Carr tipped his head to the east side of the lake as he poured. "Where they found the remains of extinct elephants, both African and Indian. Explain to me how the skeletons of Indian elephants come to be here. Also, seven human footprints, dated 1.5 million years ago. And although some debate it, the remains of our first human ancestor, Homo erectus, first man, the papa of us all." To the eye, the other side of the lake was just rolling sand. Fletch said, "Lots to be explained." "I'll say." A small naked boy with a tall stack of aluminum pots on his head was trudging straight-backed through the sand from the village behind the lodge toward the lake. "One can't imagine what the landscape might have been like here when it first cradled human life," Carr said. "Sure makes one curious." Fletch tried his shandy. "Is the research why McCoy flew here?" Then he took a thirst-quenching drink. "I don't know." Carr blinked. "I didn't ask him. Science wallah named Richard Leakey is in charge of all. I can see why you're digging around looking for a lost Roman city." "What I'm doing is nothing. I'm just trying to go back a few thousand years." From the terrace, Carr was scanning the horizon. "The landscape sort of calls for it. Here in East Africa, you have sort of a time capsule, a time map. All of animate life before our very eyes, much of it still walking around, the rest being ghosts calling to us to be discovered. Here we all want to read the bones." Using only their hands as paddles, the fishermen straddling logs were coming in toward shore. Fletch took another long swallow. "Carr, I was sort of surprised when you left our wounded man at the police station." Flying in, Carr had buzzed the lodge in the plane, signaling the manager, Hassan, to send a car for them. He had not been able to get the lodge on the radio. While they were waiting at the airstrip, a man looking more ancient than Fletch had ever seen, longevity walking briskly in a loincloth, carrying a spear, marched out from under a bush. Carr said this man would be in charge of the airplane while they were at the fishing lodge. "I've never seen anyone so old," Fletch said. "How old is he?" "Right," Carr said. "About my age." Fletch figured Carr to be in his late 40s. The Land Rover which brought them to the village was driven so fast over the packed sand road, Fletch was sure it would fall apart. He was sure the man's split skull would fall apart. "Did you see a hospital?" Carr upended his glass. "The colonists were better at building police stations than hospitals." They had left the wounded man propped on a wooden bench inside the police station. Carr had explained everything to the only officer there. When they left, the police officer was still working on papers at his school-sized desk. He had only glanced at the wounded man when Carr had said he was a thief. And the wounded man had watched them leave with eyes of weary patience. "What will they do with him?" Fletch asked. "I don't know. Maybe put him back in the bush, or into the lake." Crossing Ferguson Gulf to the lodge in an aluminum outboard boat, they went through a herd of crocodiles. Flamingos stood in the shallower water. McCoy is right, you know. One shouldn't meddle too much. I was indulging my own conscience. You were being kind. Kind to myself. That's the hell of original sin, you see. One can never be quite sure what is kindness to another. Near the water's edge, the little boy with the pots on his head was doing a crazy dance in the sand. None of the pots fell off his head. Watching Fletch watching the boy, Carr said, "Once in a small village way out in the bush, I saw a woman buy a postage stamp. She put the postage stamp on her head, face down, then placed a rock on the stamp to walk home that way. Made great sense. That way the glue on the stamp wouldn't get sweated away, and the stamp wouldn't blow away." "I doubt if I could walk 2 meters with a rock on my head," Fletch said, "or a postage stamp." Carr said, "My witch friend in Theka says you're carrying a whole box of rocks." Fletch said nothing. One of the fishermen who had emerged from the lake, shoving his log ashore, grabbed up the small boy. Holding the boy to his chest, the man danced in circles. The pots flew off the boy's head and scattered everywhere in the sand. "Instead of wondering what the land tells us," Carr said, "right now I'm wondering what the sky is trying to tell us. I think we'd better eat." "Okay." Finishing his drink, moving slowly in the heat, Fletch watched the naked man and the boy give the pots a quick rinse in the lake. Entering the lodge's dining porch, Fletch saw the man and boy, hand in hand, begin their trudge through the sand back toward the village. Again, all the pots were stacked tall on the kid's head. Chapter 22. "What's that? What's happening?" Facing the inside wall of the dining porch, Fletch looked to his left. The screens were bending toward him. Paper plates were 3 meters in the air. An empty beer bottle smashed on the stone floor. Suddenly, the air had darkened, yellowed. "Eat fast!" Carr shouted over the roar. He cupped one hand over his plate. His other hand shoveled food into his mouth rapidly. "What is it?" Fletch's eyes were stinging. He could barely see the great lumps of white fish yellowing on his plate. "Sandstorm. My timing was off. The faster you eat now, the less of a peck of dirt you'll eat all at once." Fletch put fish into his mouth. He coughed. Already his mouth was full of sand. Already a million particles of sand had adhered to the insides of his nostrils. His filled plate wobbled on the table. He and Carr both shoved back as the table was pulled up by the wind. It flipped over and skittered to the wall of the porch. Carr and Fletch sat facing each other, hands in their laps, no table between them. Fletch shouted, "Shall we go someplace else for dessert?" Carr stood up. "I'll ask Hassan to get a cabin ready for us. The only thing for us to do in a sandstorm is get between walls and underneath a sheet." As soon as Fletch stood up, his chair fell over. All the porch furniture was sliding by them. "How long does a sandstorm last?" "A few hours, a day, a week." "Can I call Barbara? Tell her we'll be late?" "Sure," Carr said. "There's a telephone box at the corner, right next to the pizza parlor." "Carr, I saw a murder." They were in narrow beds in a small cabin. It had grown dark. The wind howled. Sand blew through the walls. Lying under the sheet, Fletch had kept his mouth closed. Still, his tongue, teeth were gritty with sand. Occasionally, he had spat into a glass. Carr suggested he stop that, saying his body needed the fluid. Fletch kept his eyes closed until his lips became too heavy with sand. Then he'd roll over and wipe his face against the lower sheet. The sheets became coated with sand centimeters thick. Less than every hour, he would get up and flip the sand off his sheets. Sand was in his eyes, nose, mouth, sinuses, in his skin. He wished he could keep his nostrils closed. There was a primitive shower in the cabin. It dripped in loud splats. When Fletch could hear the shower splattering, he knew the wind was down somewhat. Mostly, he couldn't hear the shower. At the moment, he could hear the shower splattering. Carr asked, "Is that the box of rocks you're carrying?" "I guess so." Carr said, "I've got strong legs, too." The cabin was hit with another sustained blast of hot, sand-filled wind. "At the airport yesterday," Fletch said, when he was hearing the shower splattering again. "Just after we arrived, talking, he realized just how much sand was in his throat, mouth, on his lips. I went into the men's room while Barbara changed some money. There was a man in there acting perfectly normal, just washing up. I went into a cabinet. Another man came in. I saw his feet. The two men argued. They were shouting in a language I didn't understand. Maybe Portuguese. When I came out, there was only one man there, and he was dead. Stabbed. Blood all over the place.
The same man who was there when you entered?
No, the other man.
So you saw the murderer?
Yes.
What did you do?
Car, I threw up. I was careful to wipe my fingerprints off the door as I left.
Could you identify the murderer?
Yes, I saw him again in the parking lot as we were driving away.
A white man?
Yes, they were both white.
I saw about it in The Nation.
I forgot to look in the newspapers.
Murders still make headlines here, unless it's just Dan Dawes doing his nocturnal duty.
It wasn't Dan Dawes.
No, that's not how Dan executes people.
Whom have you told?
Only Barbara, now you.
I see. You made your decision to shut up about this pretty fast.
What do you mean?
You wiped your fingerprints off the door handle.
Carr, I just arrived in a foreign country. I knew very little about Kenya.
There is justice here.
A murder investigation is apt to take a long time.
Right.
Soon I've got to go home, back to work, start my married life, you know.
Of course.
An extraordinary wall of wind slammed against the cabin.
Fletch said, committed, but not involved.
After that thick wall of wind passed, Fletch said, did the newspaper say who the murdered man was?
I didn't really read it. Did you recognize either man from your airplane?
Fletch thought a moment.
I don't know. The airplane was so crowded.
Well, Carr said, it seems to me you made your decision. You were a witness to a murder, and you chose not to come forward.
Yeah, but Carr, suppose they convict the wrong guy?
There's always that possibility. They'll hang him.
You'll never know.
You'll be in the United States downing hot dogs and beer.
I don't want to live with that possibility.
After a while, Carr said, that's a box of rocks, all right. You can't wait around Kenya for a year or more serving as a police witness, and you have a natural disinclination against letting the powers that be hang the wrong chap.
Carr didn't say any more.
Carr?
It was hours later, but Fletch knew Carr wasn't asleep. Shortly before, there had been another loud burst of wind. Now the splattering shower could be heard again.
Tell me about my father.
What?
Sorry, my ears aren't that perfect, you know.
My father, tell me about him.
We're talking about the man Fletcher.
Please.
Well, he's a pilot. Like the rest of us, he's flown light planes here and there in the world. Somewhere in South America for a while, and then I know he flew in India. He was well off for a while. He owned 3 airplanes, his own little airlines in Ethiopia. Then that new administration took over and took over his airlines.
Just took them over?
Yes.
Didn't pay him for them or anything?
Because they wanted his airplanes, they also took over his house and his car to get rid of him.
Everything.
That government enterprises freely only on its own behalf.
Oh.
So he arrived in Kenya broke. Flew for me for a while. Now he has his own airplane again.
You have more than one airplane?
I have 2.
The wind made conversation impossible for a few moments.
Carr, Fletch finally asked, is he a happy man? Does he give the impression life satisfies him?
Pretty much. Flying around is a great life. Aren't you having fun?
Carr?
It was the time of night any dawn would seem a wearisome blessing. The wind was down for the moment, but Fletch knew it would rise again. He felt like a stocking stuffed with sand.
We didn't anchor down the airplane. What's to keep it from flipping over?
Remember that little guy at the airstrip you thought was so old?
Yeah.
He's out there in the wind, hanging onto a wing, holding the airplane down.
You serious?
Of course I'm serious.
That skinny little old guy will get blown away, too. We'll see. Chapter 23. So you two finally decided to show up.
Barbara was in a long chair by the swimming pool at the Norfolk Hotel.
What? Carr said.
What?
Fletch said. Even the sky over Nairobi still wasn't that clear.
Safe and sound. Carr rubbed his hands together. But not home on the same day. Anyone else want a beer?
Fletch stooped to kiss Barbara.
You look all puffy, Barbara said.
What?
Puffy.
We're full of sand.
Don't shout.
Fletch sneezed.
I want a beer.
Carr signaled the pool buona on the upper terrace.
Were you guys up all night?
Barbara asked. Your eyes are runny.
She wants to know if we spent the night drinking and dancing.
Yes, Carr said. We spent the night drinking and dancing.
On the other side of the pool were an English couple in string bikinis and straw hats, under an umbrella having a proper tea.
We were in a sandstorm, Fletch said.
Sure.
We were in a sandstorm.
I hear you.
Not that bad a time.
Carr sat on a poolside chair.
I don't mind sand.
He was speaking as does a person who can't hear himself.
Your husband saw the cradle of humanity.
He sneezed.
Perhaps where man first walked.
Sure.
Fletch sat on the edge of Barbara's long chair.
This little old guy, he couldn't weigh 60 pounds, held the wing of the plane down all night so it wouldn't flip in the wind.
Why are you two talking so loudly?
What?
Carr asked. He now had beer in his hand.
My, you're gritty.
Barbara's hand was on Fletch's forearm.
Don't they have water in whatever lake you were at?
Crocodiles, too.
Sure.
Fletch's tongue continuously ran over the sand on his teeth.
Carr said, Life's not all roasted goat.
Barbara said, I hope not.
What?
Fletch asked.
I'll admit it wasn't a very good flight home.
Carr shook his head.
Couldn't see.
You were supposed to be back in time for dinner last night.
There was a sandstorm, you see, Fletch said.
I had some fruit in my room.
Oh, Carr said. Did he leave politely?
Why didn't you call?
Wives always want to know why you don't call home, Carr said. That's the way it is with wives.
There were no phones, Barbara.
A fishing lodge without phones?
The madam wouldn't let us, Carr said. She said the brothel's phones were for paying customers only.
Did it ever cross your mind I might be worried?
We were almost sanded down a full size.
Fletch sneezed.
Did you catch cold?
Air-conditioned brothel, Carr said.
Sand,
Fletch sneezed.
Sinuses.
He sneezed again.
Oh, hell.
Hope that's all you caught.
Didn't go fishing,
Fletch sneezed. The English couple looked over at him with concern.
Nile perch there. Crocodiles in the lake and the fishermen go out on it straddling logs, their legs and feet in the water.
What was I supposed to do if you didn't show up?
We did show up,
Carr sneezed.
Any word from my father?
No.
Fletch stood up.
I've got to take a shower. Start getting this sand off. Thanks for a lovely trip.
Fletch sneezed.
Carr.
Barbara came into the bathroom as Fletch was getting out of the shower. He had rinsed his mouth and his nose and eyes, washed his hair, and scrubbed his body over and over again. He still felt like the inside of a cement mixer.
I was worried, Barbara said, worried sick.
There were no phones, Barbara, no radio that could work.
All day yesterday I sat here feeling sorry for the way I acted yesterday morning, for the things I said. Then you didn't show up, didn't call all night.
We were in a sandstorm near the Ethiopian border. There were no camels coming this way.
Then I began to get angry all over again, angry and scared.
Fletch banged the side of his head with the heel of his hand.
If my ears don't pop soon, I'm going to go nuts. I feel like I've got a balloon in my head. Then you two come prancing in this afternoon looking like a couple of kids who'd been playing in a sandbox.
We flew home at 12,500 feet, Fletch said, with the window open. Otherwise, Carr couldn't see. The sandstorm reached that high. Even the cockpit was full of sand. Can you understand that? We're deaf. Our ears hurt. Carr kept having to open the window. Did you stay away all night because of the way I acted yesterday morning? Were you trying to teach me a lesson or something? Oh, Jesus, Barbara. If I ever play that sort of game on you, I'll let you know. Where are my swimming trunks? Fletch went into the bedroom. In the top drawer of the bureau. Good thing we knew there was a swimming pool at the ski lodge. At least we have swimsuits. The two pairs of skis stood in a corner of the room. The other side of the window next to them, hibiscus flowered. What was I supposed to think when you didn't show up? That we were caught in a sandstorm near the Ethiopian border. Maybe a swim will help blow the sand out of my sinuses. What's that? Wide-eyed, Barbara was staring at Fletch's lower stomach. What do you think? I don't know. What is it? A wound, Barbara. A trauma. Vulgarly described as a blow below the belt. Where did you get it? Are you serious? Of course I'm serious. Where did that come from? You belted me. I did not. No one else did, ever. Not like that. Like that. I never did. Oh, stow it. You coming back to the pool for a swim? I'll take a shower. Okay, I'll go for a swim. Then play in the sandbox for a while. Fletch sneezed. When I come back, we can think about what we do next. If you don't make it, Barbara said, telephone. Chapter 24. So, Barbara said. So, Fletch said. They had ordered breakfast on the Lord Delamere Terrace. Here we are in Nairobi. So we are. Having a honeymoon at last. And a night's sleep. Across Harry Thuku Road, Nairobi University was awake with students coming and going in the bright sunlight. A nice long night. 10 hours to sleep and 5 hours to eat and play. That much? By my clock. I feel like a new man. Fletch began to look through the standard. Except my ears are still clogged and my nose is still runny. This morning I'm glad I married you. Under the table, Barbara's leg went against his. Likewise. I was afraid that thing on your stomach would hurt. It doesn't. It never did. Just looks ugly. I don't know. I think it looks sort of erotic. One is apt to think well of one's own work. I didn't do that to you. Oh. I know I didn't. You must have bumped into something. Okay. It looks sort of like a codpiece pulled aside. A jockstrap or something, you know? Maybe you ought to go into the business of designer bruises. Is that why hitting boxes below the belt is considered a no-no? Well, their trainers haven't your sense of what's sexy, I guess. I didn't know men were so sensitive there. If you cut us, do we not bleed? Their fruit was served. There's nothing in this morning's paper about the murder at the airport, Fletch said after the waiter left. Did you tell Carr about it? Yes. The mashed rhubarb was sweetened exactly right. What did he say about it? He agrees I have a problem, a box of rocks. Does he understand why you didn't come forward? Oh, yes. I can't spend my life in Kenya reviewing their suspects one by one. Are you just going to forget about the murder? I can't. Suppose they decide to hang the wrong sack. Can't you just leave a description with the police? Oh, yeah, sure. Middle-aged white man with brown hair and a mustache. Kenya probably has more men fitting that description than they have zebras. They'd have me flying halfway around the world and back again every week, which I can't afford. Which Kenya probably can't afford. So I suspect they'd ask me to stay here, in voices sweet or stern, which I also can't afford. Carr had no suggestions. Speaking of afford, Barbara cleared her throat, I've already thought of it. Your father doesn't seem to be Nairobi's greeter, official or unofficial. This is the third day we've been here, and no Fletcher Sr. has showed up pulling a welcome wagon. I've noticed. There was a message from him, however, while we were out at Theka. Yes, saying he'd be back. He must have had a flat tire. I think you'd better check with the hotel desk to make sure our bills are being paid. I thought we'd have breakfast first. I doubt we'll get much of our money back from the ski lodge in Colorado. We don't deserve much back. They must be used to canceled honeymoons. All sorts of interesting traffic was going by on Harry Thuka Road. Besides the cars, taxis, trucks, usual to any city, There were safari guaris painted in zebra stripes, Land Rovers with spare wheels plastered all over their bodies, Jeeps which looked like they'd been rolled down mountains sideways, and a few vehicles which looked distinctly homemade. "So, what will we do today?" Barbara asked, presuming we don't have to find a cheaper hotel. Their eggs, bacon, and toast were served. "I suppose I could go looking for my father. He must be here somewhere. I am mildly curious." "A lady at the pool yesterday told me about seeing some wonderful dancers. What did she call them? Bomas. The Bomas Harambee dancers. Something like that. About 10 kilometers from here. She said they tell this wonderful story in dance about an evil spirit who takes over a young girl while she and her husband are traveling, asleep in the bush. So the young husband goes and hires a witch doctor to rid his wife of the evil spirit. The doctor comes and chases the evil spirit away from the girl. But every time he gets close to the spirit scares the followers of the witch doctor and runs away. The whole story is told in dance. I might like to see that this afternoon." Fletch was watching Juma striding down the street toward them. "And would you believe there's a game park just outside Nairobi that's something like 47 square miles? Lions, giraffes, everything. We could rent a car if you don't mind driving on the left side of the road." Striding along, shirtless, shoeless, in dusty shorts, carrying a book in his left hand, Juma kept his happy eyes straight ahead. He did not survey the people on Lord Delamere's terrace. Fletch and Barbara were too far back in the terrace to call out to him. "Someone else said there's a great restaurant called the Tamarind, great lobster, and a Chinese restaurant near here called the Hong Kong, less expensive, best soup in the world."
"You've been doing your homework."
Fletch was just getting up to go after Juma to say hello to him when he saw Juma turn into the entrance of the Norfolk Hotel. Putting the book in his back pocket, Juma bounced through the tables and chairs at them. He sat down at their table. "Are you happy to see me?" he asked.
"Absolutely," Fletch answered.
"Does that mean yes?"
"Of course. Were you looking for us?"
Juma's eyebrows wrinkled.
"Have you spent all this time in Nairobi?" Barbara asked.
"Yes."
"Would you like something to eat?" Barbara asked.
"I will have some toast," Juma said, "to be polite."
Barbara handed him her plate of toast.
"Also because I like buttered toast."
"What have you been doing?" Fletch asked, attempting to make conversation.
"I have been thinking about your problem, Fletch."
"What problem?"
"You see, my father is in jail too."
Barbara jumped.
"Very sad, very stupid."
Juma munched his toast.
"You see, he was a driver for the government, the Department of Education. At the end of an 11-hour day, very tired and hungry, he went into this bar where his brother works for some food. Someone reported seeing this government car parked outside this bar for 45 minutes. For this, he was convicted and sentenced to jail for 18 months.
"Good God," Barbara said. Fletch felt the blood draining from his face.
"Good God. It is not proper for a government car to be seen parked outside a bar."
18 months in jail?" Fletch asked.